Blog Talk Radio.
Fill My Eyes and Company with poetry. I hope everyone had a great week, and I hope you have a better weekend to follow. Oh, so happy Friday. Hello, Rex. Hello, Pam.
Good evening.
Good evening. You brushed
hello,
up.
Hello, hello.
How goes it? Everybody good?
Yep.
Nobody wants to talk.
Bring it on,
Yes. So it's Friday again. Another one of those Friday things. Yes. And I hope you're both doing well. And looks like we got a good board full of good poetry tonight. I like it.
Yes, and the Pringles are on the board in sour cream and cheddar flavors.
Well, there you go. And nobody invited me. What's up with that?
Well, it's everyone's invited. It's free for everyone. So dig in.
Well, I didn't know we were served.
There's beer. There's wine.
I did not know we were offering refreshments this evening. That is wonderful.
We are, yes. Except for not salty Pringles.
No salty Pringles?
Quick and ready to share. We've got 5 cans loaded and ready to go.
Oh, my goodness, that's
go.
A long night. I don't think
you
have that much
like
of a show. Really.
Bounce on in with the Pringles.
I hope they're little cans. I don't know how he's going to make it through with 5 cans in one little show.
Well, they're so light and airy. Those big cans.
We'll have to send them out for more.
There you go. There you go. See that? The mistress of ceremonies. You know. Mm-hmm. And the mistress cracks the whip around here, so. No doubt it. Mm. So, yeah. So, I don't know. Let's see. What else is... Oh, my God. And he says it again. Hi, Metablu. Good Lord. There's not much metabolism in the world to get me through 5 cans of Pringles. Not in one sitting, that's for sure. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, so I'm trying to think. We got good poetry tonight. We got a nice full board. I think it'll be some fun. And we got good folks on the board. Oh, shit. Puddles is holding out for the chocolate cake. Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. There you go. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, let's see. We have another caller on the line, so let me pick that up. And hello, Laurent. Welcome to the party.
Thank you, Jean. Good evening, everyone. Hey, Rex.
How you doing?
Hey, Pam.
Hey, Lauren. Good to hear you.
Weather check for the day.
We're up to peanut butter fudge Pringles now.
Oh, I'm not even looking now because that's yucky. To me, that doesn't sound good.
That's just bloody miserable. Oh.
Yeah, right. Now, Pam,
and
did I
we
see
have,
you?
Oh, along with Quicken and Robbie and Puddles, Aaron just joined us on the board as well.
Hey, Aaron, welcome.
Good
evening, welcome,
everybody.
Absolutely. It's good to hear you, see you. All that fun stuff that we all do. I said to Rex earlier, we had a cold and damp day here. It wasn't raining yet, but it feels like it's going to start. And Pam, did I see that you had snow?
Yes, of course. After a whole winter of barely having any, wake up to the ground covered with it. So on the first day or the day after the first day of spring.
Oh, of course.
Yep, of course.
That's so crazy. And Rex said it was raining at his place, so we got a little bit of everything going on. And Laurent, what do you got, a blizzard up there?
The what?
Laurent. Well, I asked Laurent if he had a blizzard up there. Oh. I guess he didn't.
Well, close to it. No, I heard you. I couldn't get off mute. The antenna is sticking. No, we got snow and we got a breeze and it's, I don't know, 24 degrees and 17 degrees this morning. What the hell?
I'm glad I'm not there.
Now, yeah, wow.
Cold enough here, and it wasn't all that cold. You know, I let the dog out, and I left the back door wide open, and the air came in, and it wasn't overbearing. It wasn't freezing, so I was happy. I like it.
Well, that's PA for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got good weather here. We got a weird.
Yeah,
I've been
looking for the snow coming, and Quicken said he's already had 6 inches. So I guess everybody's got a little bit of watch. Right?
Oof, rather them than me. Nothing personal, guys, but rather them than me. Just.
Yeah, I have a friend who's visiting her son in Virginia, and they're supposed to have flooding there soon, and we're supposed to have snowstorms up here soon. And so she's coming back to this area from Virginia, and she's hoping to miss the heavy rain in Virginia and somehow miss the snowstorms in Wisconsin. And it's
God.
Good luck with that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. Here it is. It's almost April.
I know.
Yeah.
Go figure, you know. It's crazy stuff.
Well, I do remember a time... late 60s, early 70s, we had I was living on Long Island at the time, and there was quite a bit of snow during that period as well.
I tell you. It's just, I don't know, the weather's just been crazy all over, you know, all over. It's, you know, it's just, Pam's have got about the craziest weather so far that I've seen from the norm, because, you know, she only gets about 3 days of summer all year, you know, but she's bouncing between spring and winter and back to spring again. She doesn't know what the hell she's doing. Right, Pam?
So, well, let's face it, I never know what I'm doing, but I'm especially confused this year.
I'm telling you. Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess we should get the party started.
Sure.
Otherwise, I'll carry overs, and then I'll feel like it's all my fault. So be it. I can't get excited. Okay, the first piece I'm going to put up for tonight is a carryover from last week. And this is by Quicken, and it's called A Shadowed Note. So let me put that up. And I have an audio for this. And let me hit the button. Here we go.
A Shadowed Note by Quicken. Hello, my dear friend. I caught myself writing you a note. The one who's always with me. My quiet companion on these solo journeys. It's like a little nod of appreciation to you, put together during those calm twilight moments when you stand out so clearly against the fading light. My shadow, you're always there, keeping up with me, gliding across sidewalks and weaving through the grass. Side by side, we move in rhythm, in tune with the world's pulse under our feet. You know, it's a bit funny chatting with you like this, almost like you've been there through every silent chapter of my life, watching it all manifest. In your quiet presence, I find a reflection that's not caught in any mirror, but drawn in light and shadows instead. You're like my shadowy other half, quietly catching every tear that never hits the ground, and echoing back the laughter that the sky swallows up before it has a chance to linger. You've walked with me, a true companion molding to the world's curves beneath us. I wonder, what stories could you tell of the textures under our feet? From the harsh, cold concrete to the soft, welcoming grass. In you, I see the essence of me, a silhouette breathing with my lungs, pulsing with my heart, yet without a heartbeat of its own. I often ponder over how your life is intertwined with mine, yet it's so distinctly your own. Do you feel a sense of calm when the night wraps around us and you blend into the darkness? Or is there a part of you that misses the light, the very thing that gives you form? In the silent moments we share, I started to see you as more than just a shadow. To me, you're a keeper of secrets, a protector of those brief passing moments that go wordless. Having you quietly by my side has been such a comfort, always there without passing judgment, grounding me and reminding me where I stand in the grand scheme of things. Ours is a strange kind of friendship, isn't it? Bound together by light, yet we're worlds apart in every other sense. This note's for you, for always being there, to shout out to the way you've matched my every move, caught me when I've tripped, and jumped for joy with me in my happiest times. You're so much more than just a shadow. You're a quiet friend, with me through every up and down, a reflection that doesn't sugarcoat anything but shows the real, unfiltered journey we're on together. As I sit here, words spilling out, I'm really just saying thanks. Thanks for sticking by me, for being that silent strength at my side. You and my shadow, you're a part of me that's always there, steady as the world spins on. This note, it's my way of recognizing you, my constant friend, as we walk this journey together, through every splash of sunlight and every stretch of shade, leaving footprints on the soul of this world.
Great read, Quicken. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. And Laurent, the last one in the room, why don't we kick it off with you, please?
Yeah. Personification of your shadow through reflection, you know, a shade that comforted and grounded you is fascinating to read. It allows you to go backwards and see all the points where a shadow almost as another person, almost as another entity, matched your every move, was with you at every important point, never really jumped down your throat. Trying to think, was always there, a steady friend. Now, obviously, we were talking about a shadow, but the way you made it into another person, yet yourself, was really, really fascinating. I love the way you did that.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Pam, what about you?
Yeah, well, first of all, I like the read. It was very good, and I like the fact that he wrote it in, like, a letter with, you know, hello, my dear friend, and there was such a personal note to this. And I thought, how neat that this can be either literally a shadow, which kind of made me think of the movie where Robin Williams played the grown Peter Pan. I could see this being a grown-up Peter Pan who's distanced himself from the Lost Boys and that world, and writing in a serious tone to his shadow, who was once such an important part of his life. But I can also see it being that the shadow represents a friend that you no longer keep company with, but you miss what you had with them because they've gone into a darker a way of life, into the shadows, or perhaps even death. I like the layeredness of this poem. And there's so many great lines throughout, but I particularly like, you've walked with me, a true companion molding to the world's curves beneath us. I wonder what stories could you tell of the textures under our feet, from the harsh, cold concrete to the soft, welcoming grass. And I think that's a very thoughtful line because of the fact that if you think about it, that if a shadow could talk, first of all, as Aaron said in the room, you know, I think a lot of us would be in trouble if our shadows could talk about the things we do. But, you know, besides that, it's just interesting to think of the idea of a shadow having the ability to feel textures. A wonderful write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about
you? You know, I thought this was a great job by Quicken. The emotions and the thoughts were well expressed. Enjoyed his imagery. And I do like that kind of double note there. Yeah, he's speaking to a shadow, but in reading it, you know, you don't know if it's a shadow or a friend. You know, I mean, unless you're looking for that. I mean, it's just so nicely written. I have to say, I picked it up. Just notes for you for always being there. It's a shout out to the way you've matched my every move. From that line all the way down to the end, I thought it was just, just well said. The whole thing was great. There were many great lines and stanzas throughout. So excellent job, Quicken, and thanks for sharing this one with us. Absolutely.
Nice. Thank you, everyone. I'm going to go with, for me, this is pure introspection. That note of, when you get the left-hand brain arguing with the right-hand brain about this, that, and the other thing. This is that note of introspection where you can actually stand out in the sunlight. You've got the shadow there, and you can hold a conversation in note of that shadow, knowing those things that you can't share with anybody else. You do share with someone that other side of you, the darker half, so to speak, because this does walk in light shadow. And shadow holds quite a bit of things. It is that great area sometimes we get lost in. But also, when the shadow goes, when everything is black at night, there is also that note of being wrapped within that shadow itself. So for me, this is that reflection of celebration of that portion of you, which is always there. It holds the sadness, it holds the celebration, the joy, the happiness, and everything else that is expressed as you go about your daily things, whether you're from a childhood into young adulthood, into adulthood. It holds all of those memories and visions that you can actually hold that note and give thanks for the fact that you're still in a space where you can actually offer up that shadow and still notice it. So, nicely done, Quicken. All right, Jane.
Okay.
Back on you.
Nice work. Now, Rex, I'm coming to you with this next one. This one's called Final Treasure Seekers by Darkened Auras. So whenever you're ready.
see. Final Treasure Sheet of Secrets by Dark and Lord. My sister and I are set sailing today. I've heard stories since I was a lad, how my father longed for adventure and the trip that he finally had. He left when we were little. I was 8 and she was 5. Went out searching for a death wish, but no man was meant to survive. Near a decade passed, and she swears there must be some clues to his whereabouts. I keep trying to tell her he's long since dead, but her eyes are mouths and turns about. So I'm doing this for her sake. If she wants to search the seas, I gotta say that it sure beats my old job of chopping cheese. We've been out here a week now. Just what does she hope to find? I'm hanging out in the cabin, trying to rest my weary mind. The constant teeter-totter of the waves has me feeling rather ill. Never thought I'd want so badly to have my feet planted firmly still. Oh my gosh, I heard loudly, but she found something yet? I ran up on the deck shouting, did you catch something in the net? She was holding a message in a bottle. I didn't know these truly exist. Opening it, we found proof of a monster. A selfie of our father was quite the twist. He looks like he was in a state of panic. He had the camera the wrong way round. Suddenly, both of us fell to our knees as our heads began to pound. Whispering voices dug deep in my brain, so I couldn't decipher what they had to say. I just stumbled back down below deck to try to sleep until the next day. I awoke to a loud thunder crack, then a giggle. What the heck? Sarah? I questioned it loudly as I slowly stepped out on the deck. It's beautiful, isn't it, William? To me, all was black as night. What's beautiful, I asked her, noticing her eyes open and cloudy white. She started slightly levitating, swirling gray clouds caught in her sights. She reminded her of Beverly from it, who stared into an alien's deadline. I ran down to get my compass and find out just where we are, but the needle just spun wildly and there's not one guiding star. I ran back up on deck again when I heard a splashing sound. Frantically searched from stem to stern, but there was no body to be found. Zira, I screamed out loudly as pain struck in my heart. Would it be my fault she died at sea? Why did I humor her from the start? The boat drifted into calmer waters, but there was still black clouds and lightning left behind, as if a whole other dimension resided there, in an invisible globe confined. My compass is working fine now, but I'm torn on what to do. If my sister is still alive in there, could she survive until rescue? Should I just save myself, sulk and drink my memories away? Could I even live not knowing of her fate, or would she haunt me every day? I turned the boat around, back into the eye of the storm. Lightning struck the water, and a whirlpool began to form. Rain started pouring down, soaking me in crimson red. I fell to my knees and whispered once again echoes, like cannons shooting in my head. A gigantic beast emerged from the whirlpool. My father stood upon its beak. Arr, this Davy Jones locker you'll find. It'll be treasure that you seek. I recognized him as my father. However, he looked a lot worse for wear. He spoke as if he were a pirate. Was there a beating heart in there? His clothes were torn and tattered, his skin pale, and looked a bit decayed. And as his eyes burrowed into me, tell no distinction could be made. He didn't see me as his son. He left as a child so long ago, only as another sea dog searching for treasure, just someone looking to make some dough. You're the treasure we seek, father. Don't you remember your very own son? Confusion clear in his face, the beast led him onto the ship. Nose to nose, as he said, boy, what have you done? I took a big gulp as I tried to explain how Sarah wanted to know the truth. She wished to find the clues of what happened. She wanted to come asleep.
Tis rubbish you speak, lad, for be true all be. Why he be only the one? Tell me where she be.
The creature let out a bestial roar that shattered the sky and sea, tentacles rising slowly up as its thousand eyes set on me. Father climbed back upon its beak.
Matters naught. You best be on your way. She has a ravenous hunger, you see, and we never let anyone get away.
The tentacles crashed from causing waves that began to overwhelm. My boat was tossed along the sea and thrown back out that realm. I couldn't go home empty-handed. Just what would I tell our mother? That we went searching for father. I lost my sister and failed as a protected big brother. I had to find my sister. I prayed it not be too late. Went back to my port town to get help from my best mate. He always liked my sister. I knew one day he'd ask her hand. The dire news I brought made him take full command. He commandeered my vessel, a captain knowing what to do. He needed only one direction, and he sailed on, focused true. I stayed below deck pondering, fearing we'd see the beast once more, now that it's no longer sleeping upon the ocean floor. The hull had started breaking against some jagged stone, as she was led by distant singing in a quite familiar tone. We crashed upon some boulders. I got the wind knocked out of me. Once I got my bearings back, a horrific sight I got to see. My sister swam up to my friend, her eyes still cloudy white. She locked her lips with his and grabbed his shoulders tight. With one fell swoop, she drug him down as a tail splashed out so foam. My eyes grew wide to learn the truth. She somehow became a siren. Now that I was stranded with no landmarks near or far, I guess that ends my story. This whole encounter, so bizarre. And boom. All right, Gene, you get to kick this one off. You mutating?
Yeah, I was. I was typing, so I just muted myself. I thought this was a nice story poem by Christina. One of four, you know. And it was a good finale to the series that she wrote here. I thought it was well told with good imagery, and it was so creative and much enjoyed. So thank you so much, Christina, for the share. Really well done. Good read, too, Bex, by the way.
Thank you, Jean. Laurent, how about you?
I'm sorry. Yeah, my mute button does not want to go away tonight. It wants to stand there and stare at me. First of all, a long poem, well read. It takes a lot. I assume it was a cold read. There are little bits of so many things in this. I don't know, Herman Melville comes to mind. I mean, he's got Billy Budd. There are some pieces almost of Master and Commander in here, which I saw recently, so that springs to my mind. And other films that take a character or characters that are young, send them out in search of adventure or on some kind of a quest, only to meet horrifying things during the voyage and to lose one or the other and then see them come back as something other than human. Just a lot going on in this that is really fascinating to read. It's quite an undertaking to write something like this, and I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Nice. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, how about you?
Well, first of all, you did do a great read of that, Rex. I really enjoyed this. I remember she had written part two for one of our After Midnight shows for one of your contests. And the fact that she's brought it to four parts, and she's I thought this was a great way to end the series. Just like the other rites, it's epic, it's adventurous. It's great storytelling, but I like how she changes the perspective of this one. Instead of being from the perspective of the father, it's the children, you know, and I'm guessing grown children, but it's, you know, his children that go out searching for him, hoping to find the same man that they knew. But, you know, because of his circumstances and because of what has happened to him, he's changed, and yet there's still that kind of idea of protecting family within this, and I like that because the idea that, you know, there's this protectiveness of between the siblings shows a very human and emotional circumstance and part of the story. And so there's some great lines all the way through. But I did especially like where she threw in some of the more pirate-like speak, like with, "'Tis rubbish ye speak loud, for if true it all be, why ye be the only one, tell me, where be she?" And then I also really like where it says, "I couldn't come home empty-handed, but what would I tell mother? that we went searching for Father. I lost my sister and failed as a protective big brother. I had to find my sister. I prayed it not to be too late. Went back to my port town to get help from my best mate. You know, wonderful lines there and very well done.
Nice. Thank you. It is a long piece, and it should be just the way it fits itself because it tells the finality of the story, but it also opens up at the back end. Is there a siren song to come from this? Because Sister is now part of that ocean depth. And Laurent, you're right that there's a whole lot in this with storytelling. I see this Stephen King in this. I see it. I see the Dead Zone also in this from Stephen King. And Pirates of the Caribbean. That picture itself gives both note to it and Pirates of the Caribbean. The little paper sailboat reminds me of that scene rolling down the gutter and leading towards it and where the little boy just disappears. But she hits on the maelstrom along in this, the whirlpool, and the thought of the boy finally coming upon his father who's changed so much being part of the ocean, doesn't recognize his sons yet. It still comes out at the back end of this where the boy is now the part of the tale that moves forward, as well as the sister, and she has now been transformed into that siren, and she grabs her lover and takes him into the depths with her. So, Christina, this is a hell of a piece. Much enjoyed, and thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. For the next piece I'm going to put up a piece by Olivier called Leprechaun. We're only about a few days shy of making it to Patty's Day. And I'm going to give this one a read. Leprechaun. I saw an old leprechaun about 3'3" doing a jig beneath the tree. He wore a green hat, coat, trousers, and boots, and a gold buckled belt that was falling off loose. His jig was quite jiggy as he leaned on his cane. His pot of gold shimmered like a bow from the rain. As our eyes met, he vanished. He was one with the wind. Oh, how I hope to see him again. End poem.
Great region. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you?
Oh, this is great. Wonderful rhyme and flow. Absolutely delightful lines for all ages. You know, wonderful. I really like the description of the leprechaun. But I have to say what really made me smile, in part because it made me think of Q in the room eating Pringles and trying to do the jig, was his jig was quite jiggly as he leaned on his cane. His pot of gold shimmered like a bow from the rain. As our eyes met, he vanished. He was one with the wind. Oh, how I hope to see him again. And I like that. I like that. It's such a fun and magical piece. Very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
It is delightful, like a little nursery rhyme. It paints a beautiful picture. I could see him standing right there. Anybody with some artistic talent wanted to take this and paint that leprechaun. Everything that you need to do it is in this. It's beautifully described. It's cute. It's funny. And it has staying power. I don't see something like this going away. It can be repeated generation after generation to children or adults.
Excellent. Thank you. All right, Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was a fun brevity, well-rhymed and good imagery all through. And it was a great little piece, you know, well-written and much enjoyed. You know, that's what I like about Olivier's work is it's usually short and sweet and, you know, and it's usually really well-rhymed, as always. There was always a touch of fun to them, and I like that. So nicely done, Olivier, and thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, it is a perfect bite of what a leprechaun represents, and I did like that touch of humor. His jig was quite jiggly, offering up that note. Well, maybe he's put on a few pounds over the years, so to speak. But It does end up with that note of, oh, I hope to see him again. That sort of maybe grabbing his pot of gold and having a bit of it himself. So nicely done, Olivia, and thank you very much.
Nice.
All right, Jane.
Okay, kids. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Jenny the Deep. And I'm going to ask Pam to give it a read. It's called Boundaries Crossed. So whenever you're ready, Pam.
All right. Let me see here. Did you already put it in the room?
I did.
No.
Oh. No,
I didn't. Oh, no, I didn't. Look now, don't be funny now. Don't be funny now. Just because I forgot to hit the button, you don't have to bring it up.
Boundary Crossed by Jenny the Deep. Linear charcoal fences intersecting, dividing, distinguished, delegates alike, imprisoned within, intensely interjecting, a hue of visceral rage impedes muted minds, confined to the wrong side of the tracks, a kaleidoscope of worlds crack and crumble, forcefully fighting like soldiers in barracks, until nothing is left but a red sea of rubble. After an atrocious tornado of a night ends, pieces set to rise with morning's light, luminescent warmth helps hearts to mend, promising a rainbow of hope in future sights. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Right off the bat, when I read linear charcoal fences intersecting, dividing distinguished delegates alike, coupled with the title Boundaries Crossed, I immediately saw that this is a meeting of two opposing forces arguing over land, perhaps, ending an invasion by one into the other. And it seemed to confirm that with confined to the wrong side of the tracks, a kaleidoscope of worlds crack and crumble, then forcefully fighting like soldiers in barracks until nothing is left but a red sea of rubble. I wasn't entirely sure. Then when I read the third one, I really wasn't sure about where this had gone. I mean, I understand that an atrocious tornado of a night implies all kinds of chaos, but perhaps whatever was going on was all done with in one night. And with the morning light, there was peace, luminescent warmth. But maybe the night itself is what he's talking about, where bad things happen. Not entirely sure, but this is based on an abstract photo prompt, so I'll wait to see what you guys say.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. Gene, how about you? But you got to press the button.
Unmute.
Again, you know what? It's not going to be this way all night, I swear. I went over and I looked at the abstract prompt in it, and I could see where she got this from. But it definitely is a conflict that's come to a boil and you know, ended at the end of the night with this horrendous explosion. But, you know, with morning comes peace, so it says, which is pretty good. I grabbed up the image. Oh, well, I thought I did anyway. I did. But I thought it was really well done and a great take on the prompt itself and a clever piece there, Jenny. And thanks for sharing.
Nice. Thank you. Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yes. I definitely did stumble over some of that. Quite clever use of alliteration. Great to read. And I like this. The last stanza, actually, and I'm blanking out on the title of the song, but, you know, the song that goes, "Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?" And it was written by that guy who actually had witnessed this battle. And when the sun was rising, there was the American flag, the still you know, still tattered and torn, but still flying. And so the only part.
Star Spangled Banner.
Yes,
yep.
Thank you. I shouldn't have blanked out on the Star Spangled Banner, but sometimes I blank out on the simplest things. So thank you, Lawrence. That last stanza reminds me with the luminescent warmth helps heart to mend, promising rainbow of hope and future sights. And, you know, the lines before that remind me of the Star Spangled Banner. And so I really like the imagery and the metaphor in this and how it does speak on a war or battle going on and how there is that morning light that offers up that sense of hope, that sense of peace, that maybe it is all over. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Nice. Thank you. Laurent, you're right in part of it, but I think Jenny left it open-ended, so you could run a gamut of thought upon how you interpret, because it does offer up the Red Sea. It does offer up the linear charcoal fences intersecting, the idea of division, two forces opposing. And Pam, yes, that back end could work as John Paul Jones was relaying what was going on in that battle over the night during 1812 when he penned those words down and relayed what was going on to the prisoners below decks, because he was there on that ship at that time to trade prisoners. And the commanding British general or British admiral at that time said, it'll all be over by morning, so we can wait till then to do the prison transfer. Anyway, this is open-ended, so it could be relayed on a number of thoughts to a number of situations and how it is with the morning comes that note to minds that were, like she said, muted minds in the moment who were hell-bent in that moment, and how the next day offers up a thought of a different kind, actually getting to the table and sitting down to iron out the differences rather than keep trading, whether it's insults or bombs. So it works on all levels from that fact. So
you're talking about Francis Scott Key, right?
Yes. What I said? What did I say? John Paul Jones?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Shit. Okay.
You and Pam are having a moment. It's okay.
We are apparently right now in this moment. If you put mine and Rex's heads together, we probably wouldn't make one brain. But eventually, we'll get it back.
I have
it's back to back after midnight.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. Oh my god.
Yep.
You could go places with that.
Yep.
The what?
Okay. Let's see. The next piece I'm gonna put up, Laurent, is I'm gonna put up for you. And this is called The Impossible Is Never the Improbable by Laurent Montagne. I don't know. I always say it wrong. So, by Frank. You know him.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'm a Frank whisperer. All right. The impossible is never the improbable. In this world of ours that we have created and presumed to be its benefactors, there's a certain thing that speaks the truth. A truth that we might not accept or dare to question its relevancy. No, that the truth I speak of is not false in nature. It is composed of a genuine essence that is expressed by rationality, not mere words professed of empty worth. When we define those things that are definite, they tend to be more probable than possible. Life is full of endless possibilities that present us uniquely a world of aspirations or a world of failures. Men make the bold assertion that they know everything relative about living. They forget the true meaning of life. Where should we make the distinction about what is impossible and improbable? We should begin by admitting that the only certain thing in life is death. the only possibility about death is it's not improbable. Thus, why even indulge ourselves with the idea that good things are always possible and bad things probable? The impossible is never the improbable. It's only a cheap imitation of what we describe as boredom. End quote.
Greg Reed-Lenard, thank you very much. And Jean, we're going to start with you.
You are. I thought this was another great piece by Frank. You know, when he gets into that that mode, boy, I'll tell you, he puts together some great pieces. This piece I picked up from, I gotta post this so I know where the hell I was. Life is full of endless possibilities that present us uniquely a world of aspirations and a world of failures. Men make the bold assertion that they know everything relative about living, but they forget the true meaning of life. Where should we make the distinction about what is impossible, then improbable? We should begin by admitting that the only certain thing in life is death, and the only impossibility about death is it's not improbable. Thus, why even indulge ourselves with the idea that good things are always possible and bad things probable? The impossible is never the improbable, and is a cheap imitation of what we describe as boredom. I just think that it's really well, as you know, as usual. And I think Frank did a great job with this piece. And yeah, good thoughts. Gives everybody something to think about.
Absolutely. Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Pam, how about you?
Could you have Lauren comment first, please? Because I just got in.
You feel those power going to your back, Lauren? It's now your turn.
Well, thank you, Pam. I was still in the process of formulating a rational answer. Let me see if I can double clutch and get it in gear.
Ooh. That's the tire spinning.
I'm spinning my tires all right. All right. Man can believe the impossible, but man can never believe the improbable. Yeah, the impossible is something we butt our heads up against all the time. All the time, whatever it is. The improbable, we never see coming. Precisely because it is improbable, and that's what kicks us in the ass, ultimately. I like the way he handled the quote. He transformed it into something that is definitely not boring, but a philosophical discussion of the possible and the improbable. Nicely resolved. Great job, Frank.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Pam, are you ready yet?
Well, I read enough of it to get a general idea. But I always enjoy and appreciate the philosophical aspects of Laurent's Oscar Wilde pieces. And there is some great lines all the way through, some definite food for thought. But I especially have to say that I like where he – oh, gosh, now I got to find that part that – oh, here, this. It is a truth that we might not accept or dare to question its relevancy. Know that the truth I speak of is not false in nature. It is composed of a genuine essence that is expressed by rationality, not mere words professed of empty worth. I like that line, not mere words professed of empty worth, because oftentimes when people go on babbling and just to, you know, show their own worth, to stroke their own ego, and then it becomes like a bunch of hot air rather than something that can help to move their own thoughts forward or the thoughts of other people forward. I also really like, we should begin by admitting that the only certain thing in life is death, and the only improbability about death is it's not improbable. You know, that is, you know, such clever lines that make us realize that, you know, what things can change from moment to moment up until really that moment, that time of death, when it will be there for everyone, not in the same way, not at the same time, but eventually we all get there. So wonderful, thoughtful lines and very well done.
Thank you, everyone. I'm going to go, this is a thinking piece because of how Frank's used the words impossible, probable, improbable, and possibility, and how he's aligned them up against each other. You get lost in the minutiae because you're trying to figure out what he's trying to say. The idea is, hey, you know what? You can spend your life on the minutiae and not get around it because you're not actually thinking of what is or what could be. You're thinking on how do I defeat this? How do I defeat that? Like death. Death is that note to that it will happen at some point in time. There's no way of getting around it. And the back end of this, the impossible is never improbable. It is only a cheap imitation of what we describe as boredom. And that has had me thinking of cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I am. So, but if you're not thinking, then you end up with that note of boredom. You're not using your mind for what it was made for in the first place, which is to offer up ideas and thoughts and notes on nature and what is within in the human angle of things. So, nicely done there, all thanks, and thank you.
All right. Okie dokie. Well, I got a few audios, one after another, so here we go. First one I'm going to put up is by Errant Panther, and it's called Intricate Silhouettes. And I have an audio for this, so let me hit the button.
Intricate Silhouettes by Errant Panther. We are but dreams measured in the breath of shadows. We are facets of everything written on the fringes of a delicate tapestry. We are the folds between truth and consequence, where doubts bloom. We are a collaboration of folly and influence, with no fixed destination. We are wind chimes dancing to rhythms far beyond our sense of self. We are blue suede shoes reliant upon prevailing moods and reactionary impulses. We are the light that we revere deep within, faithfully tended mirrors. We are nothing less than intricate silhouettes. End poem.
Great read, Errant. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, Pam.
All right. Yeah, this is such wonderful lines here, beautiful and thoughtful imagery and metaphors. And I like the sense of movement that this has and the use of juxtapositions that balance each other out. We are the folds between truth and consequence where doubt blooms. We are a collaboration of folly and influence with no fixed destination. We are wind chimes dancing to rhythms far beyond our sense of self. Really, really great lines on the thought of how we influence each other. And I particularly did like where he says of a collaboration of folly and influence, because it does often seem that we are oftentimes influenced by you know, following the fools, following those who are in that moment of folly, you know, maybe because we think they're having fun or something, but really they're leading us down an irrelevant path. So great writing all the way through. And I see he got both a gold and a silver in this for this write, which is definitely well-deserved. Very cool.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Lots of very impressive stanzas in this, not the least of which are the first, "We are but dreams measured in the breath of shadows." One I particularly like is "Where wind chimes dance into rhythms far beyond our sense of self," which really speaks to old beliefs, mythologies, great mysteries, far beyond our sense of self. There are things, I'm convinced, that affect us. I find this a fascinating style, the "we are, we are, we are." Now, if I was going to add a stanza to this, it would be something like, "We are slivers of thought, sandwiched between moods, augmented by circumstance." It's a nice form in which to establish abstract observations that make more sense than abstract observations normally do. This is very skillfully done. I enjoyed it.
Nice. Thank you, Rob. And Jean, what about you?
I said I thought this was an excellent piece. I really did. I thought that each stanza was standalone in many ways. You know, they were just segments that didn't have to be connected to each other, but I thought that they were very well put together, leading up to a great three-line ending, because we are nothing less than an intricate silhouette. And it's so true, because, as he says, you know, we're facets, you know, we're folds, we are collaboration. There's so much, because we're not all just one-sided or two-sided. There's so much more to every one of us. And I think that this, as Lauren said, it was skillfully done, and I really appreciated it. So thank you so much, Aaron. This is a great share. Mm-hmm.
It is very skillfully done, because that prop poem called "Dress Rehearsal" offers up the notion of where he went with his thoughts, and it rolls within that very angle of the coming together in order to get everything on the right page in the right moment, and it to be done step by step. So the whole thing unfolds, but it also kind of holds on that note, the tapestry of life itself. So nicely done, Aaron. Well done, and thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the next piece I have, I'm going to ask Pam to sing. It's by Betty Boop.
Right.
Well, you could sing it. Come on now. I have faith. But it's okay, because I have an audio for this one. I worked hard to get this audio. and this is called "Kiss Me, Sailor" by Betty Page.
I was going to say that.
There you go.
"Kiss me, my sailor. What will I do with a drunken sailor? What will I do with a drunken sailor? What will I do with a drunken sailor early in the morning? Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises early in the morning. Grab his booty with my lusty hands. I'll grab his booty with my lusty hands. I'll grab his booty with my lusty hands now, early in the morning. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises early in the morning. Ride him on his longboat till he's wasted. Ride him on his longboat till he's wasted. Ride him on a songboat till he's wasted early in the morning. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises early in the morning. Kiss him, he's all tongue-tied in my deepest wet kiss. Kiss him, he's all tongue-tied in my deepest wet kiss. Kiss him, he's all tongue-tied in my deepest wet kiss early in the morning. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey. And up he rises early in the morning. Put him in my bed, I'm the captain's daughter. Put him in my bed, I'm the captain's daughter. Put him in my bed, I'm the captain's daughter, early in the morning. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises early in the morning. Oh, that's what I'll do with a drunken sailor. That's what I'll do with a drunken sailor. That's what I'll do with a drunken sailor early in the morning. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises. Yay, hey, and up he rises early in the morning. yay, hey, and up he rises, yay, hey, and up he rises, yay, hey, and up he rises early in the morning.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Betty, thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, Laurent, we're going to kick it with you first. Is this your first in on it?
Well, that's cool. And you know what? I really would have paid money to see or to hear Pam sing this. This would have worked really, really well. This is an old, old song. The only people I can remember doing it, and I love folk music, is a group called the Irish, Irish Rovers. Okay,
yeah.
The Irish Rovers. And it seems to me that what was done with this is that the original lines of the poem is slightly changed. You know, what will we do with a drunken sailor? Shave his belly with a rusty razor. Put him in a longboat till he's sober. Put him in the bed with the captain's daughter. So what was done, slight line alteration to make it very humorous, which I really enjoyed. It was a very clever parody of the original. I thought, Pam, you got to sing it.
Oh, no. There's not enough Pringles in the world to make me sing that.
I'll pay money.
Oh, well
I didn't have to pay a penny, and I got to hear Rex sing it. So, hey, I'm one up on all of you.
Always
remember, though, you get what you pay for.
mine was priceless. Yes.
All right, Pam, come on down.
Oh, my goodness gracious. This is just absolutely fabulous. I'm so glad that Betty made a recording of it. First of all, I do have to point out that Aaron says in the room that another use of the Pringles can is to cover that uprising. And that cracks me up. Really a wonderful spot on parody. Fun, clever lines. I love the way she puts her toes up to the line. So many great lines throughout, but because I just love to grab the booty, and because there's that double wordplay there, the booty being the cute little behind, but also being the pirate's treasure. I really like grab his booty with my lusty hands. I'll grab his booty with my lusty hands. And of course, the riding the long boat. Yeah, I really like riding the long boat. I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness. Okay, yeah, wonderful writing and very well done.
All right, Jane.
This thing made me smile from ear to ear last week when you sang it, which I give you credit for. I told him to put on his high heels and his skirt before he started because it had to be done. But I thought it was really a spot-on parody, and it was really enjoyable. And I was so glad that I finally got the audio from her so we could play it this week because it was much better that way. I liked it this way. Put him in my bed, I'm the captain's daughter. Put him in my bed, I'm the captain's daughter. Put him in my bed, I'm the captain's daughter, early in the morning. Yeah, and up he rises. A perfect line to follow that, you know. Well done. I just thought it was great, Betty. And then thanks for the smile. Nice job.
Yep. And Betty had the right idea of a pirate looking for some loving. He just got his booty call. And... We had to do this a second time because we didn't get this until a half hour after the show ended last week on Sunday. So when we got it, Gene said, all right, I'm putting it up on Friday so we can hear Betty sing it. And yes, thank you, Betty. This was a perfect parody.
Yeah, it really
and
was.
Only in Betty's style.
Absolutely. It was so much fun. So let me see what I have here. The next piece I'm going to put up is by Robert M., and it's called Fate. And I have an audio for this one. Quicken's got the shivers. They shivered his timbers now. Ruh-roh. I don't know. I just hope there wasn't a snack pack of Pringles there, Aaron. That's all I'm going to say.
Well,
okay.
Wait a minute. Robbie puts in, I have a poet friend who dressed like a hot pirate. I couldn't help think, arg, I want to plunder your booty. And then Quick and drop in, arg, your booty shivers me timbers.
Yeah.
They're having a bit way too much fun.
They always do. They always do out there in that room, I'm telling you. Okay, so I have an audio for this piece by Robert M. called Fade, and here goes.
This is my recital of Fade. Slowly creeping bitter cold, gripping me with spiteful hold, remembering the dreams I sold in order for me to grow old. Whispers still plague the mind, with memories best left behind. Hope, of course, has long resigned, leaving me emotionally blind. Those whispers lulled in somber tone seal my heart in proverbial stone. In cyclical misery I am shown, in the end I die alone. Seeping into blackened shade, the wicked pit of darkness made, my emptiness and feelings paid. Avert your eyes and let me fade. Away from the menial dissonance, away from heartfelt consequence, away from timeless penitence, away from blissful ignorance. The obscure stage has been set for the favored marionette. With this curse I cannot forget just how deep the abyss can get. Looming at the modest pall, adhering to the shadow's call, I walk down the blackened hall to greet the shame of my final fall. Seeping into blackened shade, the wicked pit of darkness made, my emptiness and feelings paid. Avert your eyes and let me fade.
Great read, Robert. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, Gene. What about it? Let's start with you.
I can find that button again. You know, when I first heard this piece, I thought it was wonderful. It's just an excellent piece by Robert. He does darkness so darn well. But I have to say that last time I didn't pick out any lines because back then I wasn't doing that. But I have to say where this picked up, away from the menial dissonance, away from heartfelt consequence, away from timeless penitence, away from blissful ignorance. And I took that all the way down to the very end. I'm not going to read all of that because I think it's just a little much. But the repeat stanza, seeping into blackened shade, the wicked pit of darkness made, my emptiness and feelings paid, avert your eyes and let me fade. Just let me go. Just let me drift off into, you know, the darkness or the abyss or whatever word you want to use, and just let me be. Just let me be. But I thought it was just so well done. He has a great way with the dark rites, and it always has a perfect tone to it. So great job, Robert, and thanks for bringing this out and sharing it with us again. Really enjoyed it.
Nice. Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, how about you?
I have to agree with Gene about where the poem picks up a bit. I mean, the first three stanzas weren't bad, but the next five picked absolute butt. I'll go even one stanza earlier. Seeping into blackened shade, the wicked pit of darkness made, my emptiness and feelings paid, avert your eyes, let me fade. I can see Laurence Olivier, for instance, in Shakespearean dress, reading those lines, and it would not be out of place. This is really, really excellent. Great lines all the way through.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Laurent. And Pam?
Always a pleasure to hear Robert read one of his poems. This has such amazing rhyme and flow. You know, it has a great lyrical quality. It's wonderful all the way through. But I really like within the first three stanzas how he does set the stage and how you get the idea of somebody who has hustled their soul their right to happiness in order to lead a long life. And so, you know, where that he says that at the first stanza, slowly creeping bitter cold, gripping me with spiteful hold, remembering the dreams I sold in order for me to grow old. And then whispers still plague the mind with memories best left behind. Hope, of course, has long resigned, leaving me emotionally blind. And also the reference to the heart, seal my heart in proverbial stone, that idea that all sense of emotion has been left behind. And it brings up that question of, you know, is it better to leave a shorter life filled with all the emotions that a human can feel, or is it better, you know, to not have to deal with the pain of love lost and those other ups and downs of human emotions. And so I thought this had a really thoughtful tone to it all the way through. Excellent dark right and very well done.
Nice. I'm going to go, let's see, how about Oscar Wilde? I can see this as part of the backstory to Dorian Gray and how that story unfolds and eventually ends. So, nicely done, Robert. Thank you very much.
All right, Gene, we're back on you.
All right.
Yes, Rex, and I'm coming back to you. The piece I just put up is called A Poet's Fate by Jody Melton. So whenever you're ready.
A Poet's Fate by Jody Melton. In the hearts of the city where stories unfold, I ventured downtown where fortunes are told. Seeking wisdom profound, I entered her space. A mystic so wise with a gaze full of grace. She looked at me once, then twice, then thrice. Her words carried weight like a roll of the dice. Hey, kid, she whispered, your fate lies ahead. Write the poems that raise the dead. Her voice, like a melody, danced through the air, echoing secrets of world beyond compare. Let the ink pour out of your heart, not head. Her words, like a spell, as she softly said. With parchment and quill, I set out to explore the depths of my soul like never before. Each word I penned, a whisper, a plea, to breathe life into tales of antiquity. I wrote of lost loves and battles long fought, of dreams that were shattered and lessons hard taught. With each verse I penned, a story untold, a journey of healing for young and old. For the ink that flowed from my pen to the page was more than just words. It was wisdom. It was sage. And through the path, maybe rocky, and the night may be long, I'll write on. I'll sing my soul's song. So here's to the fortune teller, who saw what I'd be, a poet, a dreamer, setting my words free. Hey, kid, she said, with a nod and a grin, your destiny awaits. Let the writing begin. And poem. All right, Gene, you get started. This one.
I knew you were coming to me first. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I know. It's a rhymer, and I love a story poem, too. It was a wonderful story poem by Jody all the way through. I have to say, I picked it up here. With parchment and quill, I set out to explore the depths of my soul like never before. Each word I penned, a whisper, a plea, to breathe life into tales of antiquity. And I took that all the way down to the end. And really, there's no excuse for not picking up the first couple of stanzas, but it really... I don't know. I just thought he really did a great job with it. And I liked the very last stanza. So here's to the fortune teller who saw what I'd be, a poet, a dreamer, setting my words free. Hey, kid, she said with a nod and a grin, your destiny awaits. Let the writing begin. I thought that was just wonderful. There's something about it that just, I don't know. He did a great job with this, and he pulled this story out of nowhere, I would assume. I don't think he really went to see the fortune teller. But It was just really wonderfully done. His rhyme and meter is always spot on. And, yeah, it kept you interested. And I think you did a great job expressing yourself.
All right. Thank you, Gene. And, Laurent, how about you?
Well, Gene said it better than I could probably. In this case, I agree with everything that she said. More than that, perhaps, it's almost the story of what's in every person. I really believe that given the chance, a lot of people who never would have thought of writing poetry, but if they were pushed to it, would have the capability to do that. We're all unique in that way. We have thoughts that are simple, but when pushed, sometimes we can really surprise ourselves. I believe that every man could be a poet if he wanted to be. I might say every man. I mean all of us, man and women. So, and just impeccably written.
All right, thank you, Laurent. Pam, what about you?
Yes, this was a very enjoyable poem. Great rhyme. I like the way the lines flow one into the next to make a complete story. And, you know, I just really enjoy and appreciate the idea of someone going to a fortune teller and finding out their destiny is to be a poet. And, you know, I also like that he went old-fashioned with the parchment and quill, you know, which just sounds so much more poetic than, you know, sitting at my Kindle Fire or something, or my PC. Parchment and quill. I set out to explore the depth of my soul like never before. Each word I penned, a whisper, a plea to breathe life into tales of antiquity. You know, and then the lines following that are wonderful. And I like how he speaks on the idea that oftentimes when we start writing poetry, we do it for ourselves and for what we can bring to our own soul and our own journey. So very well done.
Mm-hmm. Nice. This is a little different too. If you notice, the first four stanzas are set with the end rhyme being the run before he drops into his usual angle of offset rhyme within the piece itself. I wrote of lost loves and battles long fought, of dreams that were shattered and lessons hard taught. With each verse I penned, a story untold, a journey of healing for young and old. So he finishes the last three, walking that his usual valley. And he starts off sometimes offering up a little bit of end rhyme before he rolls into. But those first four set the pace for the back end of this, those last three stanzas. So nice meet on, Jody, and thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a great piece. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up, I'm going to ask Pam to read, and it's called The Shadow Man at the Door. Oh, by Pam Ray.
All right.
There we go.
There came a knock upon my door in the midnight hour, a most bleak and ominous sound, silence followed that bade my soul to cower. But as the door began to creak, I swiftly held my ground, forewarned by the baying of some horrid hounds, that devils were coming to enter my home, their twisted lips bathed in blood and foam. They were led by a man made of shadows, his voice was born from bitter death, a single syllable burdened with the many woes. Upon my tired face, I felt his fetid breath. His hollow eyes held brimstone in their depth, and I, in that moment, saw knowledge of my crimes, holding forth the judgment of the passing time. I pleaded for the sweet touch of mercy to be kept away from Hades' fires, but the demons, they just laughed at me. Malicious maws dragged me through the mire, where I was bared to wear a sinner's attire, burning tar poured upon my head and nethers. I, who felt guilt too late, dressed in pomp and feathers. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Laurent, let's start with you, please.
I just finished the last line. Got started a little late. I, who felt guilt too late, dressed in pomp and feathers. The Shadow Man at the Door presents a pretty scary story. Did you write this based on the picture itself? Yep.
I did, yes.
No, I really like that. I like the art, too. A lot of cross-hatching in there. That's nice. He's very classically styled, as far as I'm concerned. I immediately thought of some terrifying poetry for children and young adults that I may have read as a child but can't remember the name of. But when the second stanza, they were led by a man made of shadows. His voice was born from bitter death, a single syllable burdened through the many woes. On my tired face, I felt his fetid breath. Really enjoying the wordplay in this and the rhyming. It's very skillful, and it's a classic story, I think. It feels that way, you know? Nice job.
Well, thank you very much.
Nice, Laurent. Thank you. Jean?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Pam, I thought this was great. Oh, my God, I'm really not on mute. I thought it was a great job. A well-penned poem of, and I used the word atonement. I don't know if that's correct, really, because that's a different side of the coin. But, you know, paying for one's sins, you know, whatever has been done, you know, now it's time to pay the price. And that's what I got from it. And I thought it was nicely penned and a great take on that prompt. You know, trying to keep that shadow man out. You know, I get it. But nice job. And I did especially like the last stanza. I pleaded for the sweet touch of mercy to be kept away from Hades' fires. But the demons, they just laughed at me. Malicious maws dragged me through the mire, where I was bared to wear a sinner's attire. Burning tar poured upon my head and nethers. I who felt guilt too late, to dressed in pomp and feathers. Definitely, you know, nicely done piece. So, great job.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm going to walk along with Laurent. I get a mix of things with this. A touch of the Raven, a touch of the Telltale Heart, a little Dante, and that note to the Man of Shadows, a thought that it got to Gollum, the clay being from Jewish folklore.
Hmm.
Very cool thought. Thank you.
Yeah, that was nice. Nicely done there.
You're welcome.
It's good to have memory. Angry people with memories, you know, it's makes for much better conversation.
Hey, sometimes my memory gets burned in the moment, and all of a sudden I have to wait 5 minutes later. Oh, there it is. And then I have to come back. Yeah, this is what I was thinking on that one. All right, Gene, we're back to you.
Okay, well, the next piece I'm going to put up is a piece by Rhonda Yoshri called Sunset's Stunning Live Show, and I'm going to give this one a read. Quicken says, where am I? Who am I? Go back to the foot rub. Don't talk to us about it. Anyway, Sunset's Stunning Live Show by Rhonda Yoshri. Sun glides swiftly, putting its shiny hands in the yawning sea, wallowing its feet in the soft sand, and revealing its glowing body to the eyes of the awestruck shore. A brisk boat strides the sea. Its broad shoulders sway like a graceful ballerina. Shyly takes water's outstretched arms, yielding to the warm, strong hug. The talented music producer Wynn stands on the deck of the horizon, reciting and singing dainty poetry and entertaining my muddy mind by its improvised live show. End poem.
Nice. Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get to start with this one.
I like this. It's got such beautiful imagery to it. And I love that, again, it's a poem that has a wonderful sense of movement. And I like the personification that she uses in here, and especially in the last stanza with the wind. The talented music producer Wynn stands on the deck of the horizon reciting and singing dainty poetry and entertaining my muddy mind by its improvised live show. I like that she you know, shows us the Wynn as a music producer that creates all that movement and sound within nature. So wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice, and thank you very much. And Laurent, how about you?
I agree with Pam. It's personification that really gets me here. I mean, what you should personifying the sun, the sea, the sand, the shore, the boat, the water, the wind, all the elements that make up a beautiful sunrise, a beautiful show, as it was, an improvised live show, is rendered so skillfully in these three stanzas. Great imagery as well.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I have to agree with both Laurent and Pam. You know, it was a great brevity, nice imagery and personification. And I thought each stanza was really well penned. You know, there's only three stanzas, and I mean, I grabbed two of them, but I probably could have put all three and not felt guilty. They all had wonderful lines in them and really well put together. So thank you so much, Rhonda, for sharing with us. It was a great piece.
Nice. For me, it's that last line, and entertaining my muddy mind by its improvised live show. It's dipping into the simple things in life and enjoying those moments where you can actually seem empty-headed in the moment or without a thought in your mind, yet it's those little touches of nuance, the sun, the wind, the boats bobbing, the waves that offer up these thoughts in these three stanzas, and especially that last line. It's that moment where everything collectively comes together in the moment to prove that life can be simple if you enjoy what is around you in the moment. So nicely done, Rhonda. Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right. We're coming back to you.
Well, Laurent, the next piece I have is for you, and it's called No More Sacrifices by you, Laurent Yvonne. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Jane.
Mm-hmm.
No more sacrifices. Summer's tongues of flame wrapped my world, replacing winter's winds of ice. Rude heat, a line jumper without patience. Someone needs to call the lunchroom monitor. Winter was sleepy, dozing on his feet, so summer cut in front, violating the natural order. Certain things are written, inviolable, set in stone. Careful delineation of seasons, thou shalt not transgress. Yet here we are. Way too warm in March. Buds that stirred in February's mild madness opened the blue skies daubed in fleece, streaming in the mild heat of premature May. Winter wakes, nudged by December, a nervous month, jealous of its position, last before the first. January is in the bathroom, missing it all. Four texts Zeus, what the fuck? Shoulder shrug. He's a busy god. Stack with the Animoi. Bunch of blowhards always have an answer. No answers forthcoming. Gods of wind have scattered. Internecine fighting prevails. You can see the results of their inattention. And why blame the gods? Because we always have. Damn them for our pain. Praise them for their benevolence. So, gods, damn it to hell. Resolve your shit. Keep the seasons tidy. Someone jostles winter to action, name of blizzard. One extreme to another, wind cutting like blades, snow up to my eyeballs. All right, gods, we're done. No more sacrifices. And
great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Jean, start with you.
Well, this is a great piece, Laurent. I like the use of the deities and the weather and, you know, the way the weather's kind of crazy and, you know, someone needs to call lunchroom monitor, and there's just all these tidbits in there that, that add to the touch of humor throughout. You know, Thor, Tech, Zeus, what the fuck, shoulder shrug. He's a busy god. Check with the animal. A bunch of blowhards always have an answer. You know, no answers forthcoming. Gods of wind have scattered. You know, I mean, it just goes on. There's all these little quips in there that I found to be, you know, interesting and fun. So, well done. Nice job.
Interestingly fun. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Jean. Pam?
Yeah, I thought this was really a clever and enjoyable piece. Wonderful imagery and metaphors. I like how you write about the craziness of the weather and how you give each one of the seasons its own personality. Winter was sleepy, dozing on his feet. So summer cut in front, violating the natural order. Certain things are written. And I like that because it's so true of the way things have been this year. And then I also really like where you come up and where you say, and why blame the gods? Because we always have damned them for our pain, praise them for their benevolence. And isn't that so true? No matter the religion, no matter the gods throughout history, you know, we point fingers and blame when we don't like the way things are going, and we praise when we like the way things are going. So just absolutely clever lines and humor throughout, and very well done, Laurent.
Thank you.
Well done, ladies. I took a nice heavy note of sarcasm as well as the sardonic humor that you rolled in here. That someone needs to call up the lunchroom monitor had me thinking of that that scene in Animal House, the food fight in the lunchroom. So everything's nothing but chaos in the moment. The idea of certain things are written, inviolable, set in stone. Careful delineation of seasons, thou shalt not transgress, yet here we are. There is that note of, oh, we're so omnipotent in our thought to who and what we are and what the seasons are, that when they do delineate themselves a little off guard, we throw out the old notes that shit happens. Yeah, there's a change in weather patterns. It comes every 11 years, every 50 years, every 25 years, and 100 years. There's those certain things that roll through, and we forget. Why? Because we don't pay attention to the bloody past. And this is all based on that flavor mode of, like us, being of age, and all of a sudden we've got all this extra shit to worry about. The cold is seeping in the bones. Now it's too hot, and I'm sweating like a dog. Where's the shade? So it hits on the idea of, God damn it, I'm too old for this shit. Let's get it right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
And I'm coming back to you again. This piece is called Ordering Chaos by Robbie's Poetry. So whenever you're ready.
Order and Chaos by Robbie's Poetry. As you gaze out into the universe, looking entropy straight in the face, you may seek to restrain it, to defy it with order. And if you do, you may become a prisoner of your own desire, a desire to fix the state of entropy into a static state till no progress is made, and things like passion, love, and desire may fade away into a long-forgotten dream. As you gaze out into that same universe, you may desire to seek out entropy, to undergo change for its own sake, to seek out conflict and strife, born of a desire to ever grow stronger as you put your own life under evolution's dispassionate knife. You may start to see evolution and change as a holy grail to be worshipped for its own sake, grown cold and to the world's suffering and cruelty, as eventually you are blinded and you self-deluded yourself, making your own individuality the only rule. In this universe, you must seek out the balance, the middle point between order and chaos, between peace and strife, the point of balance where progress is made without the horrors of endless suffering and pain. So remember, as you look out into the stairways of infinity to seek the balance, or stand between order and chaos, and you will find eternity. And on. All right, Laurent, let's start with you, please.
Well, it's an interesting use of entropy, which is a general trend of the universe towards death and disorder. But you know, that's really part of life. Everything is evolving, and if you, as he says, if you you may, as you gaze out into the universe, looking straight in the face, you may seek restraint. It's to defy it with a order. And if you do, you may become a prisoner of your own desire. Desire to fix a state of entropy into a static state till no progress is made. Inherently, we don't like change. Nobody likes a lot of change. Everybody bitches and moans. Leave things the way they are. And it's that exact resistance against what most people perceive as the possibility of chaos coming into their lives through the agent of change. I think that is so well reflected in this poem, Order and Chaos. Very well done.
Great comment, Taylor. Thank you very much. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I like the imagery in this and the really thoughtful lines. And it's a great write on the idea of needing to find balance within our life, but more importantly, within our thoughts. I really particularly like, as you gaze out into that same universe, you may desire to seek out entropy, to undergo change for its own sake, to seek out conflict and strife, born of a desire to ever grow stronger as you put your own life under evolution's dispassionate knife. That idea of tearing ourselves apart, examining ourselves, you know, and really examining things to the point of where judgment becomes that of self becomes that knife that doesn't help us to grow, that doesn't help us, you know. And so I like that. And I also like so remember, as you look into the starways of infinity to seek the balance, for stand between order and chaos, and you will find eternity. The importance of creating, not always the importance of that, there are, to know when there's a time to stand in line, to follow the laws, and that then when it's important to step away from the laws and say, you know what, this is the time for chaos, this is the time for anarchy. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And how about you?
Okay. I thought this was well done, Robbie. I really did. I love the philosophy of the piece, the nicely expressed thoughts and great imagery. And I grabbed the last two stanzas. In this universe, you must seek out the balance, the middle point between order and chaos, between peace and strife, the point of balance where progress is made without the horrors of endless suffering and pain. So remember, as you look out into the stairways of infinity, to seek the balance, for stand between order and chaos, and you will find eternity. I just thought it was an excellent share and a great job. So thank you, Robbie, for putting this up for tonight. Much enjoyed.
Absolutely. Another thought-compelling piece. The thought within this for me is that note of order and chaos. We look at things and we see order, yet the world, the universe is chaos to begin with, how it forms, how it erupts, how it builds on itself. Yet, when we look to control either angle to the extreme, whether it's order, setting everything into a perpetual notion of how order is to be attained and maintained, then we walk into the angle where utter chaos emerges. And then when we walk into the idea of utter chaos, then we hit on that notion We have to bring order out of the chaos. So it's walking both angles. When you step over the edge on either side, it eventually kicks back the other way, making the problem that you chose to correct in the first place with order is now in total chaos because of what you did. You don't think of the predominating factor of what happens when you do this, which results in this, and then that, and all the way down the road. So it's a note of you gotta think carefully where you want to go on the side of order and the side of chaos, because the end results don't ever work out the same way. Nicely done, and explained it, Robin. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Naomi Sarah, and it's called Song of the Sea. So I'm going to give this one a read. And goes like this. I live in a bubble in the middle of the city, and as a concrete building, sometimes my heart is gray. And behind the window, I feel boredom and indifference fall on the pale faces and under the heavy steps that the passers-by drag. Then from within me, a wind from the sea rises, strong as a storm, as sweet as love. And the ocean calls me with a voice of velvet and draws in my body, the moving of a wave. And oh, how I would like to see the sea, to swell within the sun, to become a pearl big as the earth. To see the sea when it is as a mirror, where past without seeing each other, clouds of wool. Its silver beaches, its white cliffs proud in the wind, its moon birds, its horses of mist, its flying fish. And on stormy evenings in the anger of the sky, to hear a whale calling for his love. I'd swallow all the warships, their gold and cannons, to hear the laughter of 100 million children dancing in the sea, to defy death, wanting to live without holding a flag. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. And Laurent, I'll start with you.
Wow. This is really something. I often underestimate, I don't know why, and Naomi as a poet. Maybe it's just her sweet nature. I see it as something that might not contain deep thought, yet time after time after time, consistently, comes across with gems. To start it among the concrete buildings, which we all know can be cold and gray and ugly, and then to feel that call of the sea, the mortal sea, with lines such as, the ocean calls me with a voice of velvet, and how I would like to see the sea to swell with the sun, to become a pearl as big as the earth. And then on stormy evenings in the anger of the sky, the air whale calls for his love. First of all, those are great lines. They're very evocative, very emotional, at least for me. And then to finish with basically sinking all the warships, their gold cannons, and to replace that with the laughter of 100 million children wanting to live without holding a flag. Abolish territoriality. Abolish nationalities. Make us all one so that 100 million children can dance in the sea and defy death. I just love this piece.
All right. Thank you, Laurent. And Pam, bring it on.
Oh, this has such beautiful and brilliant imagery. And what a wonderful title, Song of the Sea. And, you know, I like the metaphor in this and how she speaks in the voice of someone who lives in the city. The opening lines really are great. I live in a bubble in the middle of a city, and as a concrete building, sometimes my heart is gray. That idea of longing for something more, longing for the beauty and the joy and the openness that one finds within the sea, and longing for that sense of hope and peace. And so I really thought this was stunning all the way through. But I really like, and oh, how I would like to see the sea to swell with the sun, to become a pearl as big as the earth, to see the sea when it is a mirror where pass without seeing each other clouds of wool. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice, Anne. Thank you very much. And Jean, what about you?
Son of a gun, I forgot I had to comment. I thought it was a beautiful expression of her thoughts, and it was well penned, and I enjoyed the piece very much. That's what I said when I read it in 2022. You know, to see the sea when it is a mirror, where pass without seeing each other clouds of wool. Its silver beaches, its white cliffs proud of the wind, its moonbirds, its horses of mist, its flying fish. And on stormy evenings, in the anger of the sky, to hear a whale calling for his love. Such a wonderful imagery in this piece all the way through. And nicely done, Naomi. Nicely done. Thanks for sharing again.
Thank you. Yes, the imagery was very well done in this. Those first two stanzas, they walk a different note from the rest of the piece itself. The first two, a stark reality, a kind of a difference between living within that concrete realm, so to speak, and what can be seen within the outer senses of that city, the shores, the harbors, the waves of grain across the plains, so to speak. It hits on that idea of being called back home, where we're made 90% water to begin with, so we all enjoy that call to whether it's a pool, whether it's a river, the sea, an ocean. There is that note, that love of and peace that one gets when one is on the shore, in the sand, listening to the waves, seagulls, seeing porpoises. There is that note of quietude that comes within us from that. And that's what I'm getting from this, that note of one can get out from that pastiche of dull concrete, let those kids for the first time see what it means to be on a beach. You can see the pure joy that comes with it, that note of being home. So nicely done, Naomi, and thank you very much. Mm-hmm. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Well, there you go. Now, Pam, I have this next one for you, and this is by Jessica C. Wheeler, and whenever you're ready.
All right. Mine to Take by Jessica C. Wheeler. I sip a tall glass of chilled poison and call it wine. I choke on more than I can chew, but take another offered bite. My last breath surrendered to justify my lack of air. After all, how can I allege force on a feed that I've permitted? Red-handed robbers cover my eyes. Their sticky fingers point and poke at my self-doubt. A stolen sense of self taken by my failure to object to its taking. Wreckage waits for those with misplaced worth. And I am led astray by the very night as stars appear within reach, only to deny the sky's deceit as I drown in its reflection. But a gentle nudge turns me inward. A whispered tide shifts and shakes, freeing the voice from the depths, the one that's been beating against the walls of my self-imposed prison. Scattered debris, pity, doubt, sabotage, detached from the self they once plagued. And I emerge like the voice once trapped, myself cleansed, stripped of debris, baptized by the stars. I tread the path to preservation, step my cautious step with twists and detours on the long road ahead. But I walk with worth recovered beneath the stars alone to lead on a path that's mine and mine alone to take. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, let's start with you, please. Button. Jean? Yes, no, maybe? Laurent, let's start with you, please. Wow, it's awful quiet. Where'd everybody go?
Well, I'm still here, Rex, just so you know. Not that I wanted to be the first one to comment, but after reading,
right.
But I am here.
I'm going to go with, there's a note in this version, so it's just us in the moment. It hits on the idea of low self-esteem or self-destruction and doubt in oneself, especially the notes up front. I sip a tall glass of chill poison, call it wine. They're both literally and metaphoric notes in that, the idea of drinking your life away, so to speak, because of whatever troubles there are. I choke on more than I can chew, but take another offered bite. Again, the note to overeating. My last breath surrendered to justify my lack of air. A call to anxiety within oneself. And then, after all, how can I ledge force on a feed that I've permitted? There you go. The self-doubt, the walk sand in there. And everything else hits on the idea of self-flagellation, putting oneself down because they don't have the trust or wherewithal in the self until she hits on the back end of this in that note of you can get all the help you want, but if you're not willing to make that step forward, then all that offered help means absolutely nothing. In other words, the control in how one deals with things and how one steps out of that void, that pit, that abyss, starts with you and can only be accomplished by you. You might get help along that road, but if you're not willing to do it, then nothing comes of it. It is all dependent on oneself. So I like it for that. And all right, go ahead, Pam, since you read it.
All right, great comment there, Rex. And I, too, had a similar thought of that, you can offer help, but it's going to do no good unless the person truly wants to help themselves. You know, such beautiful and brilliant imagery and metaphors. I also like how this speaks on the idea that we are oftentimes our own worst enemies, and we're in charge of our own destiny, whether it's because we lead ourselves down the wrong path or we lead ourselves down that path of healing and recovery. I really liked where she said, after all, how can I allege force on a feed that I've permitted? Red-handed robbers cover my eyes. Their sticky fingers point and poke at my self-doubt, a stolen sense of self taken by my failure to object to its taking. Wreckage waits for those with misplaced worth. And I like the thought of the misplaced worth because I think no matter what you're dealing with, whether it's addiction or abuse or a combination of all, oftentimes we forget, that we are worthy of healing. We are worthy of loving ourselves and moving down the right paths. So amazing, right, and very well done.
All right. Jean, you back?
Did you miss me?
Yes.
I did my best.
I kept calling you to hit the button. You weren't there.
What button? No, just kidding. No, I wasn't. I had to step away for a second. I thought this was a great write by Jessica. Her thoughts and emotions were well expressed. I picked up from scattered debris, pity, doubt, sabotage, detached from the self they once plagued, and I emerged like a voice once trapped, myself cleansed, stripped of debris, baptized by the stars. And I did take that down to the bottom. I'm not going to read it all over again for you. Chris PM did a fine job of this, I am certain. But I thought it was a great take on the prompt because it was written for a contest, self-preservation, for aphasiana. And I think that she said it really well. She put down the downsides, but then she started saying, you know, the flip side. And I thought it was well put together. So nice job, Jessica, as always. It's always a pleasure to have you share with us on a Friday night. So thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Well, we got time enough for one more.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me see. I have a couple, but I'm not going to. I have a short one. I have a brevity by Aaron Panther, and that'll give me two carryovers, Teresa's Dreschenkopf and Quicken, his other piece. It's just a little long for the end of the show. So let me put this up. It's called Somnambulism. I don't think I said it right, but it's close enough for government work by Aaron Panther, and I do have an audio. So let me hit that button. Here we go.
Somnambulism by Aaron Panther. I surrender to the dream for a chance to feel enticed by endless fields of wildflowers. Wandering aimlessly, I gather bouquets for lovers past and future, like time could grant that wish. I wake in the cold arms of another solitary morning, wondering why the kitchen drawers are open, and I'm clutching a handful of straws. End poem.
Great read, Aaron. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you got?
Oh, this is amazing. Beautiful and brilliant imagery and metaphors. A wonderful brevity. All three stanzas are stunning. But I do especially like wandering aimlessly. I gather bouquets for lovers past and future, like time could grant that wish. The idea that those gathered bouquets represent that love that we wish we still had or that we hope to have in the future. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, what about you?
You know, I thought this was a well-penned brevity as well. There's great imagery in it. And I loved it. The last stanza here, because, you know, I wake in the cold arms of another solitary morning, wondering why the kitchen drawers are open and I'm clutching a handful of straws. And, you know, that to me, the straws are the flower stems for the bouquets. And I think that that was really a neat way to end us, because he speaks of, you know, he surrenders to the dream. And when he wakes up, he's holding these straws. I think it was really a great piece, Aaron, and very much enjoyed it. A great share for tonight. And thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm going to go both literal and figurative on this thought. Those first two lines, surrendering to the dream, wandering aimlessly, I gather bouquets for love's past and future, like time could grant that wish. That's where the emotion lies. And that back end hits on the idea of sleepwalking, waking up in the kitchen, holding that handful of straws, and it paints what the first few stanzas offer in the dream, yet his reality is loneliness. Because he does walk that for lovers past and future. There's an idea of maybe not, but they seem to always fade away, leave. So there's always that note of loneliness that walks within that note of sleepwalking, the idea of wishing to still have that warmth of a body that is ever in the bed beside you, so you don't have to just walk within the dream. You have to actually enjoy the dream as a live motif.
Well, that was excellent. It was a great show, everybody. And Q, I'm sorry I did not get to you, your second piece. We'll move that to next Friday, and I have one for Teresa Dreschenkopf that will also be moved to Friday. And other than that, it's all good. Hopefully everybody had a good time. There's always a party in the room, it seems. And thank you, Laurent, for calling in. And thank you, Pam. Rex, as always, thanks for co-hosting with me. It's always a good show. And, yeah, I hope everybody has a great weekend.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Thank you, Pam, okay. Laurent, for the boards, Robbie, Quicken, Puddles, Aaron, and Dot. You all have a nice evening, and we'll see you again.
Absolutely. And thanks, Rex. I'll see you on Sunday if I don't see you before. Have a great night.
Yeah.